Because when I specifically went researching about White Ribbon Day in Canada, because it actually originated here, it says that it was actually founded in November of 1991, so 2 years after the Montreal Massacre. And they speak about it being the world's largest movement of men and boys working to end male violence against women and girls, and they do it through this new vision of masculinity. And I was looking kind of what into that looked like, and they said that they promote healthy masculinities by hosting different workshops and providing resources on toxic masculinity. There was one called like Boys Don't Cry, because obviously there's this very stereotypical image that men cannot cry, you cannot show emotion. And redefining masculinity and men of quality. And I found this kind of very interesting that it's a day kind of for educating men on how to not be violent. And I find it very strange that we need an educational day on how to not be violent. And that it's focused heavily actually at universities. In the UK, it's education that goes around universities and celebrated actually on November 26th, not the day of the Montreal Massacre like it is over here. And I think it's quite interesting that they chose to focus it at universities when we see such a starking rise in gender-based violence at universities, where you're kind of put in a scenario where you're just gaining freedom for the first time, you're all going out, you're living away from home. It's a lot of dangerous places. You're drinking alcohol pretty excessively for the first time. That they focus the education there when it's kind of already happening, rather than maybe going to secondary schools and putting the education there before they have a chance, or maybe not primary schools because you're getting very young and it's a very heavy topic, but to focus it.
And there'd be parent outrage.
Yeah, parental outrage, as we're
in some cases.
But the fact that they choose to do it at university when it's already happening, but they campaign to say they're trying to prevent it before it starts. And I was thinking about this. I was like, but you're starting way too late if you're trying to do it at universities, because it's already a snowball at that point, I find.
I guess I can add on this. I feel like we should be teaching like men at a younger age. If you know the saying, if a boy hits you, he likes you, which is kind of like already dangerous thing, you know?
Or like if they insult you or are mean to you or something, it means they like you.
I was told this at a young age when I was a kid that, if he like pulls your hair or something, he likes you, which is, you know, kind of already a red flag. If parents are telling you this, or boys will always be boys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it's that, you know, getting back to that idea of what the rhetoric of society is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And demythicizes, or, you know, demythicize these ideals that are held so tightly in our culture, that disallow us from making these broad steps forward, to ensure safety. But I totally know, like, you say that out loud and I'm like taken directly back to grade five, you know, where Perry in my grade four or five class pulled a dead bat out of a jar and chased me around the schoolyard because he had a crush on me.
Ew.
Right? Like,
a dead bat?
Why are you getting a dead bat?
You know, they live in cities. But still, right? It's and the response to that is usually, you know, he's just a harmless 10-year-old or whatever.
Run away if that happens to you, run.
Yeah.
But harmless 10-year-olds turn into unharmless 21-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you were just talking to that point, Rebecca, it's like, when someone is at university already, how ingrained are these patterns or these belief systems and these value systems that take it to a level where you know, I'm thinking even about just, you know, consent campaigns and things that it's like, no means no. It's like, mm-hmm. no, hands off.
Yeah. And it's the fact...
Don't chase me around with a bat.
Yeah. And it's, I think as well, I'm thinking, like, I don't know how much you have same-gendered schools here, but in the UK, it's very common for your high school, secondary school to be same-sex. And I remember when I was in secondary school and we got told, oh yes, for the girls you'll be verbally fighting, it'll be a lot of verbal fighting, but for the boys it's always physical, but it's okay because they get it out and then they're fine. And it's like, so you, even if that's not against women, you're fostering an environment where it's okay to be shoving each other in a schoolyard because you just get it out and then they make up and then they're fine. And you foster that it's okay to be violent this one time, to just get it out and be done.
And I guess when it comes to sexual violence with women, when it's kind of like scary for them to come out and like tell their stories, because they're always like told, what are you wearing? Or, well, you shouldn't have done this. Or you were probably drunk. You shouldn't have drunk this much or something like that.
Yeah. And this misconception towards feminine friendliness of like, oh, but she was so nice to me and like she said hello or something. And it's like, well, yeah, because that's just common civil manners in society. No, really. She wasn't inviting you to do anything.
It's
by
not,
just saying hello.
It's not like a welcome to, yeah, you could do whatever you want with me because I'm being nice.
Yeah, exactly. And as well, I think this is where we see the issues with kind of sexual violence cases going to court, and you see why people don't want to go to court over it, because it's so technical and tricky, and you get all of these questions of like, yeah, but what were you wearing? It's like, what does that matter? And then you see like all of these cases coming out. I mean, I've got a couple of lists here of cases that are really prominent in the media, and one I actually spoke about 2 weeks ago on my open mic in the UK, the Mohammed Al-Fayed case. I don't know if you've heard of it, but he has about 420 sexual allegations against him now, and he died last year. So it's kind of understanding how these victims are going to get justice, but a lot of them have only come forward because he's now died and they feel safe to come forward now. So there's constant fear and stigma around it of like these questions of, am I going to be asked what I was wearing? Am I going to be asked if I was drinking? And if I was, does that completely throw my allegation out the window?
And I guess because there are some people who I guess like say, well, he has a good career ahead of him. Why would we want to ruin his life because of this?
Mm.
And I think at the Paris Olympics, when they were hosting the Olympics in Paris, there was one of the athletes actually was, what's the word again? I forgot. He was charged with raping a child, a 12-year-old girl, I think, and they still let him compete.
Oh, God.
You know, banning hijabi women, like, who are wearing hijabs was bad, like, you can't do this, but allowing a literal rapist...
Yeah.
In your Olympics?
I think I read something about this. That it, like, before the Olympics started, and they were, like, debating, like, do we let him compete? Do we not let him compete?
Why are you debating about that?
Yeah, it shouldn't be a debate.
Right. But again, right, we come back to this idea of policy.
Yeah.
Right? And that even though there's a policy that states, like, these things are illegal. You know, these things are against the law. Violence is against the law.
Mm-hmm. Especially when children are involved.
Especially when children are involved.
Like young girls, like what the...
But, you know, the value and the belief system that ultimately becomes judge and jury in these instances and in these cases is viewed through a lens that still dominates through a patriarchal
lens,
value system,
okay,
you know, and accounts for all of what we're talking about here today, because if women were in charge, but that doesn't necessarily account for much, because we were all brought up also under that system, and it's really hard to see the forest for the trees sometimes, which, you know, accounts for why some people don't come forward, is because they don't even, they're not even able to recognize what happened to them and what happened to them was wrong, because it's just so commonplace, you know? And we're taught at a young age, I think, also not to trust the feelings and the sensations in our bodies, to say, whoa, that's fear. I need to hightail my little hiney out of here ASAP, or, you know, pull the alarm button or do whatever, because that's also part of the rhetoric.
You know? I mean, you see it in the stereotypical woman that you should be socialized into. You should be passive and submissive and quiet and prim, proper. You're like a perfect dolled up thing that should not speak and should not break out of this stereotype. Mm-hmm. So it runs with that, in that women should be seen, not heard.
Yeah. And honestly, when it comes to like these stereotypes and like the societal expectations on women, really kind of like make me kind of really angry, because women can, like, you know, be whoever they want to be. Why are they just supposed to be like part of these stereotypes? Why can't women, like, you know, be successful? You know, if they want a career, why can't they do this? Why do they have to be like stay-at-home moms? Why are there people advocating for that?
Also, why is there the choice that you have to either be a stay-at-home mom or have a job, and you can't do both?
Yeah, like what?
Yeah.
And I think I remember there was this other instance in the United States with this guy named Harrison Butker, who made a speech at graduation saying how he wishes he would like to go back to the good old days of the 1950s, where women only cared about having children, and that's it. So basically, stay quiet, have children, be at home, let the men do the work, basically.
Mm.
And it was an outrage, I would say. He clarified it, which basically made it worse. He basically was stating that the 1950s was better.
Yeah. I think you'll find very, very few women agreeing with that view.
There was actually this other one girl who actually tried to defend him. She's another popular podcaster. She's kind of like a right-winger, and she tried to defend him, and that really made me angry. Like, you're really going to defend the 1950s, that life was better for women back then?
Mm.
Any thoughts?
It's just mind-boggling.
It is mind-boggling, but when we grow up in a bubble, which we all do, we all have our social bubble, and, you know, those belief systems, those value systems, those ideas and ideologies that we are brought up with, and that we see in our environment, are what we take as a given, you know? And especially so if we grow up in families, for instance, that are violent. We're going to take that as a norm. You know, that's the line of how you interact with people that you love, because that's what you know and that's what you see. And it's really tough to get outside of that, you know? And, you know, maybe that's why they're targeting university students, is because it is a time in your life where you're away from your family, and the world is opening up to you in ways that you're just like mind blown, right? There's information coming at you that wasn't allowed almost to come at you in the context of family life and living under a domestic roof. It's different all of a sudden when you're at university, and the ideas that can get planted in your head are, you know, you're a fertile mind still, even though some of those patterns are the same, or not the same, but they're deeply ingrained.
Yeah. I also find that at university, you're kind of a 50-50 throw up, I think, of whether you're open to new opinions and perspectives and kind of change, and whether you're set in the way that you've kind of been brought up. There's, like, specifically I can think of examples of when I was in first year and living on campus, and you're just thrown into living with a bunch of strangers, basically. And it's usually, like, quite big, like, 7 to 8 per kitchen type of environment. And it's like you're living with a mix of people from all over. And my friend, she ended up having to request to move flats because there was one boy in her flat that had been brought up with the ideology that no matter what, where you go, who it's with, the woman that is living in the same building as you should be making you sandwiches and making you dinner and breakfast. And this boy would go to the kitchen and say to her, "Are you not going to make me a sandwich?" And it's like, I don't know you.
What?
Yeah, and she ended up having to request a move, and they ended up actually, because they ended up just having a vacant room, and it ended up, I think, becoming an all-boys flat, because it was sort of like, we can't put girls in there if you're going to keep saying that. And I had it as well with one of my flatmates in first year. He had grown up in kind of a very rich part of England, and he loved to refer, we were a flat of 4 girls, 3 guys, and he would love to refer to the girls as the dishwashers. And it's like, we outnumber you in here, but we're not washing your dishes. And it's crazy that you think that's what we are. Is we're doing degrees exactly like you. We're going through the same journey as you in, like, structural sense. And we're managing to wash our own dishes. The other 2 guys are managing to wash their own dishes.
I think it's because he grew up in privilege and he's, like, not used to doing things on his own, because, like you said, he grew up in the rich part of England. Not surprised that he's rich and he's doing this.
Yeah, but it's just they refused to see any other way about it. They were very strict into that, whereas there were other people that, my friend who's at uni at the moment, she said her flatmate's actually been open to learning how to cook different recipes, like, with her. They, like, do cooking together type of thing. So, but he never cooked before coming to uni, and it was sort of something he had to learn and get used to. So you have, like, the 50-50 throw up of whether some people will refuse to move themselves away from their beliefs and look at other beliefs, and the people that are, oh, I'm somewhere new, let me see new things, experience new things, learn new things.
The sandwich thing is mind-blowing.
Oh, yeah.
To me.
It's wild.
But, you know, when we were talking at the very beginning of the show about the different ways that violence can present itself, you know, from name-calling to, you know, pushing and bullying and stalking and harassment and those kinds of things, you wouldn't, in your wildest dreams, in my wildest dreams, I would never think that being asked to make a sandwich constituted as violence.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
Right? However, when it's something that's that benign almost, but it's ongoing and it's relentless and it's harassment, it doesn't matter if it's a sandwich that you're being asked to make or whether it's to build a rocket ship and fly to the moon together, you know? And so these I think are some of the challenges that we are up against when we talk about the ways in which we lack autonomy for our own self and sovereign selves, you know? And I know, Rebecca, you and I talked a little bit about this last week where, you know, that idea of no excuse and hashtag no excuse really can be applied to a whole host of the ways that we don't experience body autonomy, and that it's an integral piece of the puzzle, right, is to be able to get to that point where we're there. Mm-hmm. I think this is a good time to take a bit of a song break, and then we'll come back and we'll just sort of dig into that a little bit, and then we don't have very much time left. So, tell us what we're going to hear.
Yes, so this song, it's more of a well-known song, but this cover, I believe, is not well-known at all. And I really like this cover because it's a female singer in, like, a rock genre. So it feels very, like, your aggression is getting through the song. But it was, it's called You Don't Own Me. And the artist that we'll hear is called Bad Buddy. But it was originally sung by a woman called Leslie Gore back in the 1960s. And what I love is that this song came out during second wave feminism, when it was the women's liberation movement. And it's all about female empowerment and the ability to stand up against a man telling you that he's going to, like, he wants, like, objectifying you, and the fact that you don't want to
make sandwiches.
You don't want to make sandwiches. You don't want to be held to hypocritical gender standards. It's a really great song. this is You Don't Own Me by Bad Buddy.
All right, welcome back to Intravenous here, where we're just digging into the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. I'm Robin.
I'm Xenia.
I'm Rebecca.
And we just have a few, well, I would say 5-6 minutes left to sort of talk a little bit about hashtag no excuse, and the ways that that hashtag has everything to do with our own body autonomy about every single thing that is allowed to us, put on us, disallowed to us as humans on this planet Earth.
Yeah, I mean, I had an interesting thought actually when you were talking about body autonomy just then, to do with a new bill that's being passed in the UK, to do with assisted death, and the choice that people should have over if they want to end their life because of an incurable disease, and that should be their choice, not a government's choice. And when you are looking at the news articles about it, it's quite interesting that the people advocating and speaking up for it are mainly women, and the people in government that are opposing it are mainly men. And I find it quite interesting because it's not, the bill itself is not particularly anything to do with gender or anything to do with violence against people, but I just find it very strange that it's men particularly against the choice of, that's essentially coming up in body autonomy, and that it's women that seem to really want to go for it. And I'm wondering, is it because women have a better understanding of what it's like to not have body autonomy than men do?
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And honestly, another case that was very interesting that happened in the United States. So like I mentioned with threatening women with sexual violence, there was this guy who was like really crazy far right who basically was saying sorts of nasty things towards women, saying how we control you now when Trump won. And various women in the United States managed to dox his house and find his address and kind of use the word like, hey, if you're saying you're our body, your choice, your house, our choice, what they done. And let's just say he couldn't come out of the house anymore and he was scared. Well, I thought you were such a strong male, but no.
Yeah. It's like you're scared. I can think about how women are feeling, like, majority of the time.
Honestly, his house was just not that interesting. I feel like he lives in his parents' basement or something.
I don't advocate to fight fire with fire in some cases, but in some ways, it kind of leaves us with no choice at times, or it feels like that, right?
Honestly, this guy deserves it. He is crazy. If you ever heard of Nick Fuentes, that is his name. I recommend you Google him at your own risk. But he's just insane. He deserves it, honestly.
But it is, I would say, kind of a reality check. It's almost like, well, if you're going to push us into this corner, we're going to push back.
No, like,
right.
We're not going to just let you push us into a corner and just, like, hold our hands up and be like, fair.
No, like, he was over here yelling and saying, like, women, we control your bodies. Well, guess what? We control your house. They found it, so you're... How does it feel to be scared now, to be honest?
The challenge is partly that, right? I think that, you know, generally speaking, men are bigger. You know, they're more muscular, they're stronger, and probably feel or have felt perhaps less fear in the world than women, And yet it doesn't account for that idea, too, that those who were bullied bully, right? And that we really need to stretch the whole campaign of, you know, where do we find kindness and how do we cultivate compassion and how do we, you know, walk in someone else's shoes and, you know, really, really understand the trauma and the root causes of things in order to make change and, you know, provide the healing, for lack of a better, you know, less kind of woo-woo way of saying things. But, you know, there's a lot of injury in the world that creates a lot more injury. And, you know, I think that what we see sometimes in terms of, you know, male violence is a demonstration of the pain that men feel because they live under patriarchy too.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not good for any of us.
Yep.
And so, you know, we can talk all we want about, you know, how bad it is for women, but it's ultimately terrible for everybody, you know, dogs and cats included, I think, and the earth, and, you know, like we can really expand it. And I guess I get the last word because we're out of time.
Yeah.
But thanks so much for listening. Democracy Now! Is coming right up. Thanks, you guys, for a great conversation. And stay tuned next week. We'll be back.